Health and Human Services Finance Committee will come to order. I do have a motion to approve the minutes from March 14th, 2018 by Representative Lumen. Are there any additions or corrections to those? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Minutes are adopted. The first up that we have is Representative Albright's House File 3573. Representative Albright moves House File 3073 be referred to the Committee on Civil Law and Data Practices. We have the bill before us. I understand there's an A2 amendment, an author's amendment. Representative Albright moves the A2 amendment. Representative Albright, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A2 amendment is a recommendation of changes made technical in nature with assistance from DHS, and I'd just like to briefly go over those for the benefit of those. The effective dates were changed. DHS recommended that the effective dates be effective upon implementation of enhanced child care studies under NET Study 2.0. This affects lines 1.2, 1.4, 1.18 through 1.20, 2.7 through 2.9, and lines 3.22 through 3.27. The amendment also changes the language to exempt minors, and you can find that on amendment lines 1.5 through 1.8. As written, the bill partially exempts minors from submitting study information through counties. The language makes changes so that both minor and adult studies go through the counties. For ease of provider and county implementation, you'll find this information in the amendment on lines 1.15 through 1.17, as well as lines 1.21 through 1.22. The amendment contains language that further clarifies that minors are exempt from the fingerprint requirement unless the commissioner has reasonable cause to require a national criminal history check. You can find that on amendments on lines of the amendment 1.9 through 1.12, 2.1 through 2.6, and 3.15 through 3.19. BCA will no longer be sharing offender status information with DHS for studies conducted using a name and date of birth. This data point indicates if a person who has a criminal record in Minnesota also may have a criminal record in another state. In order to prevent the loss of this information, DHS recommended adding language to the standard for reasonable cause that permits DHS to conduct a fingerprint-based FBI record if a minor has a criminal record in Minnesota. And you can find that information on any amendment on lines 2.26 through 2.28. Members, this is a good bill. It represents the work of all stakeholders to this language. It is now non-controversial. And as others have said, many states are doing similar practices. We should do the same. It does not have a cost, and I would appreciate your support.
Thank you. Questions for the A2 amendment? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Albright. I don't have any problem with the intent of the bill. I just think I heard you say that this transfers the responsibility for the background check back to the counties, and is there an estimated workload or impact on them, and how is that to be handled?
Representative Albright, or if somebody from the department could answer that question. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Carter, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, committee, Patrick Carter from the Office of Inspector General at DHS. Representative Loeffler, to your question, the changes passed in 2017 related to child care background studies transferred the responsibility to conduct those studies from counties to the Department of Human Services, and under Representative Albright's bill, as unamended, it maintained part of those studies coming to DHS and part of those studies coming going directly to the counties. The A2 amendment would have all of those studies going through the counties but still being conducted by DHS. So it aligns with how the bill or the changes passed in 2017.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the reason I brought that up is just because it's the easiest thing for us to do in managing our budget. Mm-hmm. is to transfer responsibilities onto property taxes. And I know last year was sort of a last-minute effort to transfer $20 million of obligations onto property taxes without a discussion about the impacts. And I just think we need to be really sensitive, and I think the department should be as well, about negotiating these roles and then trying to figure out how the administrative costs can be absorbed. So I appreciate the information, and I think we need to just keep being alert to that issue. Thank you.
Other questions for Representative Albright? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The A2 amendment is adopted. Other questions for Representative Albright on the bill as amended? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Albright, just want to thank you for doing this kind of work, trying to make this all these little pieces work is challenging and time-consuming and, something we needed to deal with. So thanks for doing it.
All right. Is there anyone from the audience who'd like to testify on this bill? Welcome to the committee, Ms. Seidel. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Julie Seidel, and I am the Public Policy Director for MACCP and also a licensed child care provider in Anoka County. I have been for 15 years. After some compromise, we are encouraged to see the Department of Human Services testify in favor of the Senate language to repeal this requirement last week, removing any opposition in the Senate. Excuse me. It passed through the final committee with unanimous bipartisan support and the blessing of DHS. We came here today to ask for similar support from the House, and from what we understand, it sounds as though identical language will be adopted so this repeal can pass quickly and without controversy or the need for conferencing. This was important to us as we had concerns conference negotiations over language could result in further compromise or place the agreed-upon language in jeopardy. We are also concerned about the delay it would cause as family child care providers are already closing their businesses to protect their children from these invasive background studies. With the current child care crisis impacting every corner of our state, we cannot afford unnecessary delays, and we thank Representative Albright and all representatives for taking swift action to protect the privacy and rights of our children while still maintaining Minnesota's high safety standards to protect children enrolled in our care. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Seidel. Are there any questions for Ms. Seidel?
All
right, seeing none, the committee thanks you. All right. Any further discussion? Anyone else want to testify on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Albright, last word.
Thank you.
All right. With that, House File 3573 is re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law and Data Practices. Thank you, as amended. Thanks, Representative Albright. You didn't.
No. Need to.
All right. Well. All right. The motion is to re-refer the Committee on Civil Law and Data Practices. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
No. All right. What's next? House File 2920, Representative Peel. I will move House File 2920 be re-referred to the General Register. We have the bill before us. Representative Peel, your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, members. House File 2920 was brought to me by the Episcopal Church Home. The bill increases the skilled nursing facility property rate for Episcopal home through the existing moratorium exemption appropriation. A number of years ago, Episcopal homes completed renovations to better serve elders in the St. Paul Midway area. Unfortunately, this renovation put them at a property tax rate maximum. Having reached the maximum with the current rules, the state property rate system does not fully recognize the cost and the debt associated with maintaining and improving an older building. This makes it difficult for Episcopal Homes to make the necessary improvements to best serve its clients and broader community. I have with me Marvin, and but we just wondered if there was any questions for either one of us.
All right, questions?
I should note there's no fiscal note.
There's no
fiscal note. Or there is a fiscal note. It's, there's no. It's zero. Thank you.
All right. Any questions? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I'm just now, we just got the fiscal note. And I'm noting on page 4, it talks, there's zero cost to the state, but I mean, there is this cost to this fund, to the moratorium funding. And it looks like $149,000 annual cost. So I'm just curious, maybe if I read this whole thing, if I had time to read it, I'd understand all this better. But how much is in the fund right now, Representative Keel, if you know, or maybe staff knows?
I would have to ask staff.
Would somebody from the department or MDH have an idea on that?
Oh, it's in here?
Page 4 of 7, line 5, looks like
$1,040,091.
$1,091. Is that right?
Yeah, brief explanation of what we do here.
Go ahead, Doug.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, just for members, this, some members probably have seen this before and some have not. We periodically, but not on a regular basis, allocate money for nursing home moratorium exceptions as part of the budget. And the last time we did that was, I think, maybe 2 years ago. And at that time, we allocated, I don't remember, probably $1.5 million or $2 million to cover the next couple years of projects as they got approved. And so this is what's sitting there. So it's actually general fund money that we allocate to medical assistance costs when we do it, which is held in reserve here for the cost of each individual project as they have an impact. They're given an exception and it has an impact on our MA bill. So we've effectively paid the MA cost in advance.
Mm-hmm. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Berg. That is helpful. And I'm wondering whether, maybe I asked this before, but I still don't really know the answer. Maybe you can answer it, or maybe DHS can answer it. But are there any standards in place for us to make these decisions? Because we, it always seems, you know, whoever comes with a bill gets the money. And I just never know how I'm supposed to evaluate whether this one should get it or that one or none or, you know. Is there anything that you're aware of or that other staff are aware of that kind of guides these decisions?
Ms. Brenny, could you, if you could care to answer that or maybe introduce yourself first?
Absolutely. Kim Brenny from Minnesota Department of Human Services, and I work in the Nursing Facility Policy and Rates Division. And to answer your question, Representative Liebling, under the normal moratorium exception process or the traditional process where the funding has already been appropriated in a previous session, there is a selection process for that. There's a committee that is brought together, and those projects are reviewed, and there's criteria for those. In this particular situation, and we have had some others historically, to Doug's point, whereby the facility is coming in to request these funds without going through the moratorium process.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you just explain, so why would somebody be doing it that way as opposed to the other way? Is it just a matter of timing? You know, I just don't know as a legislator. You know, this comes to us as a bill for a vote, and I just never understand how I'm supposed to decide whether this is a good project or a bad one or somewhere in between or if the amount of money they want is the right amount or any of that stuff other than you know, who's carrying the bill, maybe, or something like that. So can you just give us a little more on that?
Ms. Burney.
Mr. Chair, members, I can certainly try to. And thinking back to some of the other occasions, it seems to be there's not a one answer covers all. In some cases, it may be timing. In some cases, it may be that it completed a project through the moratorium process and the project ended up costing more than what they had estimated it would when they had asked for the moratorium funding initially. So I know we've had that happen a couple of times also. So I haven't done a full analysis to review every reason why any facility has come forward to seek money from the moratorium exception appropriation outside of the moratorium exception process. But I do know that there's been a couple of different circumstances in recent years.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? All right. Seeing none, does anyone else want to testify on this bill? Seeing none, final word, Representative Keel.
I would ask you to support this bill.
All right, with that, I'll renew my motion that House Bill 2920 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is re-referred. Next up. Representative Schumacher, House File 3170. And as Representative Schumacher is making his way to the testifier's table, Representative Schumacher moves that House File 3170 be laid over for possible inclusion in Health and Human Services on this bill. We have the bill before us. Representative Schumacher, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I always take imitation as the greatest form of flattery, so I appreciate the introduction there. House Bill 3170 is really an idea for a larger discussion on how we do our grants program in the state. And basically what it's trying to do amongst some of the reporting requirements is really get down to this idea that the legislature should have some kind of input if a department is going to be applying for a grant that's going to obligate state funds in future legislative sessions. And there are a few points here with that. There wasn't any in particular piece that brought this to the attention, to my attention, to the legislature's attention, but just wanted to bring it up as a point of discussion in the in the law that we currently have, especially around the Legislative Advisory Commission. We don't have anything that speaks to this at all. It's pretty silent on this particular issue, and so this bill is going to try to address that. We do have testimony from the department today. They're going to talk about the cumbersome nature and how fluid the grant process can be and how this may hinder some of that. I'm looking to work with the department as much as we can on this to get something that can apply for that accountability and then also be workable for the department. And so I welcome them to come and offer their testimony.
All right. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Pollack, sorry.
Not quite that high ranking yet. Mr. Chair, Deputy Commissioner Dan Pollack, Chair Schumacher, thank you for your bill. I'm pleased to hear that Chair Schumacher is willing to work with us on this. I think the bill as drafted does have some problems. So as you all know, MDH has really a very strong record of transparency and performance and national recognition when it comes to seeking and receiving awards for federal funding. For fiscal year 2017, we applied for 103 federal awards and had a success rate of 97%, 100 out of 103. Federal funding at MDH represents about half of our annual operating budget, $255 million in FY17, and of that, about 64% goes out the door as grants or aid to individuals. Most of our federal funding opportunities are competitive awards, and they do require strong and time-sensitive applications. Even long-standing formula awards can require annual applications and updates on our outcomes. So current law, which is the Legislative Advisory Commission law, does provide the legislature with a lot of oversight opportunity over federally funded activities at MDH. Just a quick rundown of how that process works today. Our programs would identify a federal funding opportunity. We would submit a complete and timely application. We then await a federal agency's award, which is also subject to kind of the changing winds and whims of the congressional appropriations process. No easy task. Then we'd receive a notice of a federal funding award. We would review that award with Minnesota Management and Budget. We determine whether the funding will be submitted to the legislature and the governor's budget under Section 3.3005 Subdivision 2. We would analyze whether the funding will arrive to Minnesota more than 100 days before the next session under Subdivision 6. We submit the funding for review by the Legislative Advisory Commission members. We await the LAC members' recommendations for 10 days under Subdivision 5, and then wait for an additional 20 days under Subdivision 4 or Subdivision 6 if not urgent, and then basically find out if we're allowed to spend the money we received. If it sounds confusing, that's because it is. As written, I appreciate the indication to work with us on it. I don't think the bill clearly in front of you really simplifies the process. Unfortunately, I think it adds kind of another layer. Basically, as proposed, we would be submitting potentially hundreds of pages of additional documentation before even applying for the funding, just based on the availability of funds notice. And that would be an additional process requirements that could actually mean documentation to the LAC on a weekly basis and possibly daily during certain times of the year when the funding becomes available. I would add that our success with federal funding opportunities is really a good thing for the people in this for the members on this committee because it reduces pressure on the state's budget. If you consider recent examples where we had success, it was in the areas of tuberculosis prevention, suicide prevention, our Ebola response funding, Zika emergency funds, which had an 8-day window, opioid morbidity, diabetes and hypertension prevention, epidemiology and lab capacity, and foodborne illness, just to name a few. The overwhelming majority of these awards do not require state matching dollars or any maintenance of effort, and that is something that we do disclose already under the current LAC process. What I'd say is if we don't have changes to the bill, it's unfortunately likely to have a chilling effect on our ability to apply for federal funding, and that could actually end up in increased costs or increased requests for funding on the state's budget, on the general fund. So we do fully respect the legislature's oversight role. We want to be in full compliance with the existing law, with the Legislative Advisory Commission work and the review of federal funds that are received, a completely appropriate role, we understand. And we're happy to work to address any information gaps or details that you feel the current law doesn't provide to you in your decision-making process.
Thank you, Commissioner Pollack. Are there questions? Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I hear from the Deputy Commissioner the problems this would cause, and I guess this is to the bill's author, Jeff Schumacher. Is there an example of a specific situation or specific problem, like kind of a concrete example that this would solve? I'm just wondering, because it does seem like quite an infrastructure, I'm wondering, is there come a particular example of the department applied for something that this would have somehow prevented or something like that?
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pinto. Nothing specific on this. It's that the statute doesn't speak to this at all and the obligation of future budgets on what we have here. I would agree with most of what Deputy Commissioner Pollack had to say about the work that they're doing on the funds that they've been able to get, and that this bill probably reaches a little bit too far in that process, but we'll be working with the commissioner and the department to get something that is workable so that we have the information that we really should have on just what obligation these grants could lead for us in the future.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it sounds like from what the Deputy Commissioner said that there really is good information the legislature has once the application's made, et cetera. And I really appreciate that the plan is to work on this. I guess it's just I feel like our constituents don't want us to add additional layers of process if there's not a need for it, and there certainly may well be. But if we can't identify a specific need, and then we say, "Boy, without this has been a problem," I guess I worry that we're burdening the process unnecessarily and actually getting in the way of the department doing the work that it needs to do. So I appreciate, Mr. Chair, that you're going to work with the department on this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loeffler. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, okay. Representative Culberson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Schumacher. Trying to understand a little bit about how this could work. When the Legislative Advisory Commission meets, when we are not in session, do they get travel expenses and per diem, et cetera, as we do for other meetings, or how are they reimbursed when they meet?
Representative Schumacher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Halverson, it's my understanding that they do not get reimbursements for the meetings.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering about how we were going to, if there was going to be additional cost to this, because it certainly seems to me that the LAC is going to need to meet a lot with regard to the number of requests that the Department of Health makes. It surprises me that they don't get reimbursed for mileage and stuff. It seems like every other meeting that we attend, they do. We do. That confuses me a bit, but it does seem like this would be more meetings than we could be attending. I can't even imagine how many meetings this would be. Maybe Mr. Pollack can answer, how many grants does DHS apply for in a year? Or MDH, I'm sorry. Acronym.
Commissioner Pollack.
Mr. Chair, Representative Halverson, just using last year as a guide, with 100 federal applications, 103 applications, 100 were approved, so under this bill we would be doing everything that you see under the new paragraph B 100 times. We would be giving information about the purpose of the requested funds, the history of the federal funds provided for the same amount, total amount, etc., everything you see in paragraph B. So somebody would need to read that and approve it or disapprove it 100 times. And sometimes these do stack up all kind of the same time of year because of the federal cycle. The federal budget is a little bit in chaos right now just because there's been a lot of continuing resolutions. So you could have a situation where there's a CR, and then they tell us the award is now, you have 8 days, or you lose it for a year or maybe longer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This really sounds like the opposite of creating efficiency in government. It sounds like it will create a lot of chaos and extra work, which translates into extra dollars when we're talking about staff time. So I'm very confused about how this would be helpful.
Further discussion. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Schumacher. I'm still struggling with what we hope to gain from this, because it sounded like, and we're not the Government Operations Committee, but if you're serious about this, I would really have us consider recommending it go to them, because we have a uniform process right now for all state agencies, and if every committee here created its own process for the Department of Transportation or Public Safety or whatever, it would become really difficult. And so I'd respectfully ask if you're not just throwing this out as a try a balloon, a concept, if it's something we're going to seriously look at, that you might want to think about going there, because they really do manage that. But when I look at the time frame and this handout that we got from the Department of Health, the vast majority, 50 to 60% of the applications come in February, March, April, and May, which, of course, is when the legislature is at its most peak efforts, and so the members of the LAC would be trying to do their job here, along with reviewing massive stacks of federal applications. And if you haven't seen some of these grant applications, they can be, an inch thick. They're not like tiny little, I understand the concept sort of thing. I do think that there's a workload issue, but I'm wondering if you really thought about how this would discourage us from applying for grants, because oftentimes these grants require you to prove that you've got partnerships either with local providers or with counties or other partnerships that would need to sign off on the grant, and whether or not you would anticipate them building those networks while they're waiting for permission, or how would you envision that they would have to get the permission of the LAC before they talk to potential partners in the implementation?
Representative Schumann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loeffler, obviously the intent isn't to reduce the number of grants that are applied for to disrupt the collaborative work there. The information we're trying to get with this is just what obligation the state may have moving forward were this grant to be applied for. And we want that's what we're looking for.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The only language that I saw in your bill that really deals with this is whether there's a state commitment of funds or personnel required after the grant expires. And Deputy Commissioner Pollitt said that most of these grants don't have any maintenance of effort or ongoing obligations with them. I'm confused as to really what the ongoing risk is to the state on these grants.
Representative Schumann.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, again, the intent would be for the bills that, for the grants that would have a legislative obligation for funding, and if a majority of them don't have that, then we don't have to worry about those. But the ones that do, we want to have more information about just what kind of obligation that's going to be.
Mr. Chair, just one more example, and I don't know if WIC, for example, the Women's Infants Children's Program that we've had forever, or some of these ongoing programs might have some matching requirements of some sort. Would you want those ongoing programs to also be subject to this?
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loeffler, as we continue to work with this, I appreciate that point. As we move forward, there may be some areas that we need to look at, particularly with the ones that continue that we know we're going to be applying for, and maybe adjust this to new grants that we are applying to. I've taken note of that. We'll definitely work to address that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Further discussion? All right. Seeing none. Final word, Representative Schumacher.
Thank you.
All right. With that, I'm sorry, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as we're just hearing this, it makes me wonder two things, right? It sounds like the committee is probably going to put together a bill or potentially put together a bill. Is that on your mind as well?
Well, potentially. Right now we've got a couple bills out there. We don't have a target. We're just, got some things out there.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, it seems to me that this legislation would probably need to visit other committees. Is that your perspective as well, State Government Finance or Government Operations? Are there other committees that it seems like this should be before, since we're talking about the way that the legislature is contemplating this?
Well, right now it's just hanging out here, but if you would think that it needs to go somewhere else, I'd be happy to chat with you about that.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good idea, Mr. Chair.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to lay it over for taking.
Yeah, I gotcha.
All right. With that, for the next House Bill 3170 is laid over. We'll be hearing capital requests in the next couple of days, and this is the last time we're not going to be voting on those. Capital investment bills, we'll just hear them, and then so we'll just give them a hearing in this committee. And that will be tomorrow and Thursday. And with that, our meeting is adjourned. Thank you.